The Religion Dispatch's headline is chilling. If every church said, we will take over our community. The Christian right revolution starts small and local. Arguing that it is well underway is Political Research Associates Senior Research Analyst Fred Clarkson, and I am grateful that he's with us on State of Belief Radio again.
Well, grateful that you're having me again, and sorry that we always have so much to talk about.
Yes, me too. One of the invaluable things that you do in this piece is lay out the methodical way the political religious right has been building its infrastructure out over decades. So let's start with a quick reminder about that history.
Well, if you were the people who thought up the Christian right back in the 60s, you were confronted with a society that you thought was just wildly out of control. And so, at least as far as the political end of things, began to think about, well, what in the world can you do? And so the plan was to begin to run people for office at lower levels, particularly in Republican primaries and traditionally Republican districts. And then the more conservative Christian candidate, if they won over the moderates tended to vote Republican because they were more party loyal than the Democrats. And so they gradually built up a political capacity, a pool of activists and candidates over decades, to the point where we see now that they're in effective control of the Republican Party and a dominant factor in most states.
Mm-hmm. What's the Seven Mountains mandate, and where is it threatening democracy already?
Well, the Seven Mountains mandate is a popularized theology, a version of Christian Reconstructionism, just a comprehensive theocratic Christian view, an outgrowth of rule of biblical law under the Ten Commandments. But it goes beyond, it breaks down into popular terms that you don't need a PhD in theology to understand. And that is that Christians, conservative Christians of the right sort, of course, are commanded to take control of seven areas of culture. And that's religion, the family, education, government, media, arts and entertainment, and business. And increasingly, we've seen the Seven Mountains thinking permeate the world of Pentecostal and charismatic Christianity, which have been the most dynamic force in the Christian right and now in the Republican Party for quite some time, since at least the presidential campaign of Pat Robertson in 1988. Mm. So most interestingly, President Trump surrounded himself with folks like this, and his spiritual advisor, Paula White, is a part of the what we call the New Apostolic Reformation that adheres to the Seven Mountains mandate. And we'll recall that some years ago, Welton, you had me on. We were saying, well, how come if conservative Christians could possibly support, an ungodly man like Donald Trump? And the justification they gave was that there are a lot of ungodly men in the Old Testament who were carrying out God's purposes. And so they compared him to King Cyrus of Babylon, and they said he had the Cyrus anointing. Mm-hmm. So this kind of theology and thought really has hit the highest levels of American politics and government.
What are the structures most vulnerable to this kind of takeover?
Well, since it's functioning at all levels, right? We see it infusing all of society and culture, the Seven Mountains. We can see it functioning in all places. But it starts, the theory, at least behind the folks mentioned in my Religion Dispatches article, they really see it percolating from the bottom up. And that's part of with the conservative Christian idea that the most effective and appropriate forms of government are the most local, where you can be most, people are most in touch. Mm-hmm. And that sounds kind of populist, but it's actually a deeply theocratic idea. And we're seeing it pop up in the school board races around the country, and most particularly being targeted in Colorado. There are 17 school board races next Tuesday. And those have been, there are fields of candidates who are being promoted by Seven Mountains kinds of folks, particularly led by David Barton, who's out of Texas. Yeah. And he's a Christian historical revisionist, but a longtime Republican Party leader out of Texas. And he travels the country. In fact, he's traveling the country right now, speaking in Baptist churches, developing the most conservative Southern Baptist wing of the party at the same time as he's working with the folks in Colorado who are the more charismatic and Pentecostal wing of the party. So it's a bottom-up strategy, but things that are intended to specifically not just take over, but ultimately disrupt democratic institutions, like in this case, the public schools, so that they become dysfunctional, you know, and in gridlock, and so that the people won't trust the public schools as a viable source of education for their children.
So many people dismiss or ignore these kinds of schemes because they firmly believe the majority of Americans will never support them. But that kind of complacency ignores the fact that democracy and majority rule are of no interest to these authoritarians. And we've seen again and again how they dominate secular communities while being small minorities within them. Talk about how that works.
I think it works in a couple of different ways. I mean, one is in terms of electoral politics at any level, but particularly local level, because so few people actually participate. To pick up a school board or city council seat might only require 5 or 6% of the eligible or registered voters in an area. And in a lot of places, people don't even want to run for these unpaid positions. It's often thankless work. The mechanics of, you know, building the second floor bathroom, you know, in the elementary school or something. It's the ideological stuff that gets people juiced. And so you can turn out a lot of people, in this case, out of churches to either be a disruptive force, getting people, a couple of people elected, or even taken over. Mm-hmm. And we've seen that many, many times over the past few decades. So, I think disturbingly, we've also seen in the news in recent weeks, gangs of people coming in to be just loud and disruptive at school board meetings and pointing fingers and calling people traitors and this kind of thing. So I think that's part of the mechanics of trying to discredit functioning democratic institutions by throwing a monkey wrench into the system. And you could do that in some cases by importing people from outside of a district, people who are willing to come to a meeting and yell.
We've seen an unprecedented undermining of public confidence in our election system. How are these dominionists leveraging those doubts for their own benefit?
Well, it goes back to one of the early theories the Christian Reconstructionist dominionists thought up, and that is that if people, you know, don't trust democratic institutions, the ones that are standing in the way of their theocratic agenda, eventually those institutions will collapse one way or another. And if so, what they want to do is have an infrastructure on the ground where they become seen as the most capable alternative, you know, the last man standing kind of idea. Mm-hmm. So they've been systematically building the foundations of alternative institutions, schools, law schools, political organizations, and a whole new form of Christianity to displace denominations and traditional theologies, whether progressive or conservative. Mm-hmm. They're all in the way of this sort of transformative dominionist idea as far as they're concerned. So if you're a conservative Southern Baptist, you're in danger.
And surprise, surprise, these folks are linked to the treasonous January 6th domestic terrorist assault on our Capitol and elected officials that aided and abetted them. Is it too late, Fred?
I don't think so. I think our institutions are more resilient than we give them credit for sometimes. But even where things get wobbly, the thing is, polls show it, but you know, we know it in our own communities that most people don't support January 6th or any of the kinds of ideas behind it. I think that the danger is, as you said earlier, that we don't appreciate how powerful, well-organized, dedicated minority can be. So if you have gangs of thugs showing up at school board meetings or at the Capitol, that's deeply disruptive. We don't expect it. You know, now we have to anticipate that these kinds of things are not just going to go away. We have to be ready for the full range of Christian right kinds of activities and their allies. I mean, the Proud Boys are not exactly, you know, a conservative Christian organization, but they're allied because they share many of the same goals, and that is to discredit public institutions and be wrecking balls on the system and see who emerges afterwards.
You know, many Americans dismiss these kinds of efforts as the last gasp of a dying white male dynasty. But you write about thousands of young people actively engaged in these efforts. What draws them, and what danger does their enthusiasm pose?
They're the alternative generation that that the founders of the Christian right hoped for. They've created, a Bible college, Karis Bible College in Colorado, that's teaching people how to, you know, find your mountain, you know, how to take the mountain that, you know, is most related to your character and skills, whether it's in government or ministry or education. And so they're training people in this theology and to figure out how to act out a life that's dedicated to taking these mountains. And there are smaller versions of this Bible college scattered around, I think, in the 21 states. Now, some of them are very small, just one pastor teaching some people in a church somewhere. But nevertheless, this is the infrastructure to build for the theocratic future.
Are there any defensive moves left to make this year as local elections are set to take place just days from now?
Well, sure. I think that if you're concerned about these things, regardless of your religious or political view, turn out to vote and figure out, you know, who are the appropriate candidates to vote for. It shouldn't be too hard to research who the candidates are. In fact, if you're in Colorado, I have links to the voter guide that David Barton and his friends conveniently provided. So there's a breakout of who the candidates, the theocratic candidates are. Not everybody responded to the questionnaire. But nevertheless, all the candidates are there, so it's a good place to begin the research.
Fred, how long have you been doing this?
Four decades.
I just have to ask you, across all of these years, when you look back, is it getting better or is it getting worse?
I'm inclined to say both, insofar as I think that people are more aware of these things than ever before, or being written about and well in popular media than ever before. There were many, many years where those of us who were concerned about these things were completely dismissed. So that's much less the case now. So I think the more people are aware of what the problem is, the more people can find answers. But that said, the kinds of the movement and the institutions that support them and the evolution of sophisticated strategies to be disruptive of society are very advanced. And I think it's very difficult for most of us to accept the idea that there are people who are that dedicated, that skilled to disrupting everything we've considered to be normal for, you know, much for the past 100 years. And it's not that society doesn't need improvement. It certainly does. But I think across my lifetime, I thought things were getting better in many respects. But these folks are most intent on and having great success in making things worse.
Fred Clarkson is senior researcher at Political Research Associates, who meticulously documents the tangled web of theocratic authoritarians bent on redefining our nation in their image. His latest Religion Dispatches article is headlined, "If Every Church Said We Will Take Over Our Community, the Christian Right Revolution Starts Small and Local," and we'll link to it from stateofbelief.com. Thank you.
Well, thanks so much for having me, Welton. Glad you're there. to help to spread the word.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. Your donations help keep us on the air. Please consider making a tax-deductible gift as we celebrate 15 years of continuous broadcasting. Information on how to donate is available at stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stay up to date by subscribing to the free weekly State of Belief podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform. And take a moment to follow us on Facebook and Twitter. Be part of the conversation. Social media helps connect like-minded people in conversation and company. I'd ask you to share State of Belief with just one person this week. One person for whom you think this might be helpful. Our producer is Ray Kirstein. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. See what?